Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Hey guys, welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. We got another stranger here tonight, and very excited to have him. I just read a little bit of his bio, and I can tell you, it's going to be exciting. So we got Jason Wright here. Jason's never done a podcast. He feels, I think, a little nervous about it. He mentioned to me that he's never done one, which in 2021, you know, every person on the planet has a podcast. So it's exciting that you don't have your own podcast. That's rare. It's like seeing a Sasquatch. Yeah. How are you? Thank you for being here, by the way.
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I
appreciate it. You drove in from Palm Springs?
Yes. That's correct.
How long of a drive was that? Was that 2-3 hours, depending on traffic?
Yeah, it was about 2.5 hours. I had to stop at Portillo's and get some hot dogs on the way.
Oh, nice.
Which almost made me late, but...
Yeah. Hey, listen, we would understand.
Well, in Palm Springs, there's really not much of anything, you know, down there. We don't have a Chick-fil-A. So when we got on the other side of the mountain,
sure,
you know, that's when we go to Portillo's, that's when we go to Chick-fil-A, that's when we go to all the places that, you know,
hit up the civilization,
you will. Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I did shows in Palm Springs a couple years ago, and there was a lot of nothing going on.
You're fine.
Yeah, it was pretty boring. I was pretty bored.
Yeah.
There was a lot of weird old people.
Yeah.
There were some very eccentric gay people.
Yeah.
And there was an amazing collection of kind of redneck people that I was not expecting to be out there. I met a guy whose actual name was Billy Bob. And when I said, wait, so is your name William Robert? And he goes, nope. And then he brought his ID, and his actual name was Billy Bob.
Billy Bob. That's his first name.
That was his first name.
You didn't even have
it. It was Billy Bob. His name was like Billy Bob, like it was Washington or some presidential.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, wow, Billy Bob Lincoln, something like that.
Well, and don't forget, we also have our tweakers, too.
Well, you know, I would never forget that. I think that's an assumption.
That's the funnest part about being down there. You can just sit in your car at a red light and watch them dance.
Yeah.
So.
The coyotes of the human world.
Yeah.
I think in terms of tweakers, you know, you always think L.A.'s got some of the best, but you don't consider how great desert tweakers are.
That's
like next level.
It is.
To be sweating on meth is, I mean, that's a brave decision.
Yeah, but yet they still wear their t-shirt, their long shirt, their jacket, you know, and then they're asking for, you know, for food or...
Yeah, money or, for more tweak.
Yeah.
All right, so it says here you were... Marine for 10 years?
That's correct.
And Army for 10 years.
Yeah.
So you doubled down on the military.
Yeah.
What'd you do first? Marines first?
So I did the Marine Corps first. You know, I was 20 years old, and I was, oh man, I was probably 120 pounds soaking wet when I joined, and I really didn't know what I was getting into. And so I was, you know, when I was going into boot camp, I was thinking literally it was going to be like camp.
Right.
You know, they were going to sit down with us and explain to us, you know, okay, this is how you break down a weapon. This is how you put a weapon together. This is how you shoot a weapon.
Full Metal Jacket style.
Yeah. Well, and then I saw Full Metal Jacket because my stepfather was in the Marines, and I saw that after I joined.
Oh, okay.
And then I was like, holy crap, what did I just get myself into?
Unsign up for
this? Yeah, like a guy's blowing his brains out in the bathroom at boot camp, you know, like right before graduation. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, yeah, it was a rude awakening when I got in there, but, I mean, it was fun. It actually was.
What made you want to join the Marines? Just because your stepdad was?
No. The reason why I joined the Marine Corps was because all my friends were going into the Navy and going into the Army. And so I had actually talked to the Navy about going into the Navy SEALs. They kind of blew me some stuff up, you know, my butt, and I was like, it just doesn't sound right.
Typical Navy.
Literally blowing stuff up your butt. And I have nephews, and I have a nephew that's in the Navy, and my dad was in the Navy, and I have a whole bunch of people in the Navy who's probably going to yell at me now for that. But, it was hard to believe, because he was like, you want to be Navy SEAL? Yeah, you go Navy SEAL. But we want you to pick another job, too. And I'm like, well, why would I want to pick another job if I'm going to go in as a Navy SEAL?
Yeah.
So I ended up backing out of that, and then I was thinking about the Army. And then when I got home, I actually got some information in the mail from the Marine Corps, and it looked interesting. And I went down the next day and talked to them, and they were like, when can you go down to, you know, do your physical and stuff? I was like, whenever. And they said, can you be here at 11? And I had like 3 hours, so I went home, grabbed my stuff, came back, went down to MEPS, and I just told them, I said, I wanted to do something combat related. If I go to combat, I want to be the one that goes to combat. And I signed up and became a tanker.
What does that mean exactly?
I drove around in an M1A1
main battle tank.
Yeah, I drove it, I loaded it, I gunned it, I commanded it. And then I did that for 8 years, and then I went on recruiting duty. And I had to talk kids right there during the initial push in 2003 to 2005. Hey, don't go to college.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest thing.
It isn't.
You know, join the Marine Corps instead and get shot at.
Yeah.
You know, but I'd have kids, because I was a recruit up in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Okay.
And those kids usually went to Clemson. And I'd have kids from Clemson, like spent 2 or 3 years in Clemson, and just be like, I'm done. I wanna go into the Marine Corps. I wanna do something with my life. Because the Marine Corps is the most challenging branch of service. And surprisingly, you know, kids around that age, they want a challenge. You know, they wanted to challenge themselves. They wanted to better themselves as people. And so I was able to kind of show them the way, you know, of how going into the Marine Corps was going to do that for them.
Right.
A lot of kids wanted to go in and go to college. A lot of kids were afraid, you know, to go to combat. And I said, you know what, if you don't want to go to combat, then don't sign up for a job that's going to send you to combat.
You know?
So I'd find out what they liked, what their interests were, what they wanted to do in their future, and then I would try to get them a job as close to that as possible. And so then, my contract ended right there in the middle of that, and my wife was pregnant with our third child. Promotion was slow in the Marine Corps, and I was like, you know what, first it's for the love of the Corps, now it's for the love of the family. I got to do what's right for the family. And so I transferred over and joined the Army. And the funny thing was, I spent 10 years in the Marine Corps and never went to combat. I'd say within 9 months after signing up for the Army and going to school and getting to my duty station, I was boots on the ground in Iraq.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's fun too. I mean, my first deployment was Baghdad. I was a gunner on top of a Humvee.
What year is this?
That was 2000. When was that? 2005.
So we're all right. So
yeah, 2005 to 2006.
Things are still pretty hot over there at that point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if I'm like, wait, was this, you know, 5 years ago and things are winding down?
No.
Is the heat.
I wasn't grabbing babies from across the wall.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, I was. Yeah, we were in Baghdad. We were right there in Baghdad. International Airport was where our FOB was. We would do a lot of meetings and go to a lot of meetings and stuff like that, and we do our patrols. I've been mortared at once, snipered at twice, which hit one of our medics. But God, you know, God saved them, you know, and kept them alive. So that was good. But we've been in firefights, mortars, been IED'd twice. The second one I actually have on video, which I like to show to people.
You know,
and they're like, you're sick and disgusting. Why are you going to show me that? I'm like, because I survived.
Yeah,
because
that was my life.
Yeah.
Like, so, people will show you, like, oh, here's me on a boat at spring break.
Yeah.
Well, your life is a little different than that.
And we're a little distorted, too. I mean, I had a lieutenant on his Facebook, cover. He's holding his leg, you know, like above his head, you know, his fake leg above his head.
Wow.
Know? And he stayed in. He did... You know, he did his whole 20, you know, but it was his thing. You know, we were a little bit dark, but yeah, so.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, so my first deployment was Baghdad. My second deployment, I was actually attached with Joint Special Operations Command. And so all of Iraq was our area of operation. And so we got to, you know, hang on the side of Black Hawks, you know, inside of Chinooks, like you see in the movies and stuff like that. So now that's put the burden on me to where I sit there and I can't really enjoy a movie. You know, but at the same time, I kind of like to brag, you know.
Sure.
So I'm telling my wife and kids, I'm like, you see that right there? that's what I did.
I've done that.
You know, I've done that. You know, I'm badass. Or my son will be playing his Modern Warfare, and he'll be calling AC-130s in and stuff like that, doing all that stuff. I'm like, you know what the difference is between you and me? Yeah. And I'll give him the whole spiel. I'm like, I did that in real life.
Well, yeah, that's the thing with the kids today, you know? They're all fighting war and make-believe video games.
Yeah, they survive every day.
Did your Marine buddies give you a hard time when you switched to Army?
They still give me a hard time.
Yeah. My grandpa was a Marine in Korea, and he got shot 3 different times before he couldn't serve any longer.
Yeah.
And he died in the mid-90s, and he was still talking shit about the other branches of military.
Oh, yeah.
At that point. I mean, I was like a fourth grader or a third grader or something, and he'd be like, well, you know, the problem, Navy. You know what the Navy is? I'd be like, yeah, they're boat soldiers. He's like, the Navy is just a ride.
They're our taxi.
Yeah, he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was funny because, you know, going to tank school was at Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Okay.
So that's an Army base. So they're all Army guys there.
Right.
And so we would always, you know, we're always like throwing stuff back at each other, or we'd be at the bar getting drunk, and they would, you know, we'd stand up and do the Marines hymn, and then they would do their Army song, and then we'd do the Marines hymn again louder, and, you know, and we're dogging each other out. And I'm like, I love this. I love this. I'm better than you. I'm better than you. And then I joined the Army, and then I got all these Marines walking by me, you know, out in theater, you know, looking down on me.
Look
and
at
I'm
this
like,
traitor.
I was like, I was in the Marines too. I swear to God, I was. You know, but yeah, I have my buddies on Facebook. You know, every 10 November is the Marine Corps birthday, and we flood, you know, Facebook,
right?
You know, with our, you know, happy birthday Marines, and I get a couple of my Army buddies that forget that I, you know, initially was in the Marines first, and for the first 10 years of my, you know, pretty much my creation of who I am and what I've become, you know. So when I go and I say happy birthday to my Marine buddies, then they get all upset, and I've actually had friends defriend me. You know,
Army friends?
Yeah, my Army friends defriend me because I show more pride towards the Marine Corps than I did in the Army. But I've had, a buddy that was in the Marine Corps, retired, I think he was a Master Sergeant or Master Gunny, and he was in the Army first, you know, and then he transferred over to the Marines.
He transferred up.
Yeah, he transferred up. Yeah, well, I didn't say that you did. But,
I'm a coward. I can say whatever I want.
So now he's out there, you know, living the life. He just did the opposite of me. But, you know, I tell everybody, I say, you know, the money's green, you know. So on the first of every month when I get paid, you know, it's not any greener, you know, from the Marine Corps than the Army. And it still works at every place I go to when I go to buy something. So
absolutely,
I'm
right.
happy. You know, my bills have no problem collecting my money.
That's great.
You know, so, yeah.
What did you do in the Marines?
Tanks.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, tanks. And then in the Army, I was a forward observer.
Okay.
So I transferred over and I called in artillery and airstrikes.
Oh, cool.
Right. Worked up little packages and stuff like that. So
nice.
Yeah, when I see on the news, you know, about the airstrike that they did in Afghanistan that killed the five, I think it was like 5 children, and then
the family,
aid worker.
Yeah.
You know, and then the Army general comes out and he's like, It's a shock to us. You know, we're going to invest it. I'm sitting there going, I know the hours of workup it takes just to send that stuff up and then to sit there and look at it and watch them. Because we would have people go into a building and our time would start right there, right? And so we'd have to sit there and watch them, and we'd build up a package and doing all that stuff. We're setting it up to hire. And anywhere within that time where that comes back down and says, go ahead, somebody else comes in, that time starts over again. You know, you have to actually identify weapons in people's hands. You know,
right.
I mean, I've literally, you know, done these packages. You know, I've had to send it up, you know, with photos and stuff like that. So the fact that that happened still blows my mind.
When you say send up a package, what does that mean? It's like the information?
Yeah, all the information.
Who's there?
Yeah, who's there, the
what we're
the
trying
width
to,
and the length of the building,
right,
the distance from one building to another building, because now you have to know which bomb to use.
Right.
You know, because each bomb obviously, you know, is going to do, you know,
bigger
different
damage,
amount of damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, some bombs can just do the inside,
right.
You know, and some can, you know, blow up, you know, that building and the next building.
The whole neighborhood.
Or
yeah.
just the living room.
Right.
So, yeah, so we have to, that's what I mean by setting up a package.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Yeah, it was just, like I said, I'm a coward and a civilian, so.
You're not a coward.
Trust me, I am. If my grandpa were alive, he would be so ashamed of everything I've ever done until this interview.
Yeah. No.
He would be like, you finally are talking to a man. Maybe you could learn something from him. Go tell your little ha-ha jokes.
Yeah.
My grandpa was, his name was Dick O'Brien, and he was a real man,
yeah.
if you will. And I remember I did comedy in the probably about the same time that you were being deployed to Iraq. It was like 2005-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing my own tour of duty, opening for Pauly Shore.
Oh.
And we were in Wichita, and a bunch of my family drove from Kansas City to come see me in Wichita. And they brought my grandma, who was like the sweetest, nicest old lady.
Yeah.
And she watched me, and I was doing filthy jokes, and I was talking about just horrible sex things and stuff that I thought was funny. And afterwards, you know, I was like, hey, you know, sorry, some of my set was kind of dirty. And she was like, oh, it was great. You reminded me of your grandfather. I'm like, no, that kind of disturbs me. But so, yeah, it's he would definitely be like, this is what you chose to do with your life. And yeah. I'd be like, yeah, I got nothing. I'm a weak man. But.
No. But you know what? The greatest thing about my time in the service was actually, obviously, retiring. But was the fact that my two oldest sons went in the Marine Corps.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. So.
How old are your kids?
Okay, so the oldest one is 26 now.
How old are you?
I'm 46, I think.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
You're a little more sure about your child's age than yours, which lets me know where you rank the importance of
things. Oh, yeah.
Things.
Yeah. My oldest son's 26. He's now a civilian contractor with the Navy down in Virginia. And okay. then my middle son, Everett, he's 22.
Okay.
And he was an MP in the Marine Corps. And he's out now. He's down in Palm Springs right now trying to figure out what his next step is going to be.
Next step in life?
Yeah. And then I have a 16-and-a-half-year-old who's a junior in high school.
Okay.
So getting him behind the wheel for the first time. So, but he's not the military type guy.
No.
He's an outgoing kid. He's probably going to go veterinarian side,
okay,
you know, or maybe even like a ranger, a park ranger or something like that, because okay. he loves nature and animals and stuff
well,
like that.
Well, if he goes veterinarian, then you could say all your kids are vets, which is...
yep. And I used to think that, too. I used to think that back in the day, like, hey, veterinarians are vets, too.
When I was a little kid, I didn't know what a military veteran was, and when people would say, oh, you know, he's a vet, I'd be like, that's so cool, he takes care of dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
And then some of the times, like, I remember meeting someone who was a friend of my grandpa's, and they're like, yeah, he's also a vet. I'm just like, wow, this dude is hardcore. I can't even imagine him taking care of animals,
and he's like 80.
Yeah he was, man. Yeah. All right, so that's cool. And where were you from originally?
Well, that's kind of a long story too. I'm originally from San Jose, Costa Rica.
Okay.
So, I was born in San Jose, Costa Rica, abandoned by my mom at about a year and a half, and then adopted by my adopted mother and father shortly after, and then brought to the United States at about two and a half, so in 1977. And we moved to, and, well... They lived in Georgia, so all of our documents, all of our paperwork, all my paperwork, all that stuff is Georgia. Georgia Social Security card,
right?
Georgia birth certificate kind of thing. So
American parents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Straight American parents. My dad's from Grosse Pointe, Michigan.
Nice.
And my mom is from Mount Holly, North Carolina.
Okay.
And, like, my mom is just a little old Southern girl, you know, related to Daniel Boone, you know, like that country.
Yeah.
I'm dead serious. She's related to Daniel Boone.
Okay.
You know, so.
You were raised by people then who have, you know, heroes in their lineage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, like my dad, even though he was from Grosse Pointe, Michigan, you know, his dad was French Canadian. His mom was German, Irish, you know, so growing up, my whole life, my dad was an asshole.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and
as
then,
they tend to be.
Yeah. And then when he drunk, he was even more of an asshole. So,
that's the German side.
Yeah.
The Irish, when they get drunk, actually get nicer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But the Germans, they just get more German.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That is not a compliment if we have any listeners in Germany.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, yeah, to the point that I haven't talked to my dad since 2009.
Wow.
But yeah, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I grew up in Georgia most of my life until I was 14, 13 and a half, and I told Sarah that I had moved to Idaho, Bonner's Ferry, Idaho,
which I saw that.
Yeah, there was a boarding school up there. It was an emotional growth school. Right? Now all my friends are going to love this part cuz a lot of my friends, you know,
they were also emotionally growing.
Yeah. And they had gone there and stuff like that. And they're probably not in their head like, oh, Christ, what are the stories going to be now? Because, I mean, First of all,
what did you do to get sent to emotional growth school?
I did nothing, to be honest with you. I did nothing. It was, okay, so my dad and his brother and his father, they owned two industrial businesses in Tucker, Georgia.
Okay.
One of them was
Tucker.
Tucker, yeah.
Tucker, all right.
Yeah, good old Tucker, Georgia. One of them is called Dixie Diamond. They manufactured diamond blades, you know, for like
saws and
industrial drills
and stuff. Yeah.
Yep. So they did that, and then they had Flux Promoter Hose, which was industrial braided hoses for industries and stuff like that. You know, the transfer fluid. So he was always traveling, doing that stuff, and my mom couldn't handle me as a going into my teenage years, so she sent me to my dad. My dad's like, I'm a man, for one, I can't raise a kid, you know, on my own. And two, I'm taking care of, you know, the business.
Business, yeah.
So he found out about a school in northern Idaho that was a year-round school, and it was for 2.5 years. And I don't know exactly the cost of how much it cost, but rumor had it was anywhere between $75,000 to $150,000 a year, you know. And so my dad felt like it would be better, you know, to pay that
much.
You'd
rather spend that money.
Yeah,
than have to deal with you.
Yeah, I mean, Dad, you could give me $150,000 a year, and I'll sit in my room.
Yeah,
you know, and do my homework and be a good kid.
Yeah, I'll rent an apartment and
I'll
bother you.
Yeah,
for that.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up going there, but he ended up telling me that he had to do a business trip, and he wanted me to come along, and he bought me a first class ticket, you know, to Spokane, Washington, and we flew in, and we drove up the next morning. And as I'm walking up the stairs with the staff and the faculty member, I look back and my dad's getting in his car and driving off. And I've been going to so many boarding schools before that. I was like, well, I guess I'm going to another boarding school.
Time to...
You know, but the scary fact of it was I get put into a room. They're dumping all my clothes out of my bag. They're stripping me down butt naked and then having me bend over and spread my cheeks. And I'm 13 and a half.
Right.
This was 1989. Right.
And so they're concerned that you're sneaking drugs?
They didn't want me to sneak drugs or weapons or anything like that because of the type of
the
kids that were going
are,
yeah,
yeah,
that
typically
were going to school.
They've had enough kids, butthole knives and drugs,
yeah,
that they're like, we got to check.
I guess. And the faculty member, the one faculty member that...
10,000 Vicodin? How did you fit it up there?
I'm Greek. but no, so... So
well
one of the
played.
Faculty members, one of the faculty members, had a lisp, you know, and so like that just added more to the fear. Like here I am in this room with this
you
guy,
got your
that,
butthole.
That you know, I don't know, you know what he is, like, you know, whatever. Like
when exposing the anus, you don't want to whisper. Around.
Yeah, and I mean, at least when you go to the doctor's office, you know,
right?
You know, and he tries to like.
Yeah.
Okay, go, you know, and he goes by step, they're like, okay, now bend over and spread your cheeks. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, can I have your name first? You know, something, you know?
Get me a beer.
Yeah, please. And so, And that was the kind of school where they did big brothers, little brothers. So me being the little brother, because I was new, they would introduce me to two big brothers. And then they would show me around and, you know, learn the ropes. It was really, really restricted. We couldn't talk about music. We couldn't talk about certain bands.
A religious element?
It's because a lot of the kids. Now, the hardest drug I ever did was marijuana. You know, that's the hardest drug I ever did was pot. But
anyone who calls it marijuana, you know, they're not out
the
there.
Weed, yeah. The weed, the weed. But yeah, so I guess a lot of these kids, what they would do is, you know, it was a trigger for them, so they would remember listening to Pink Floyd as they were, you know, tripping on LSD for the first time.
Right.
You know, so, but the funny thing was I couldn't talk about Bon Jovi, you know, in 89. Yeah.
Oh, it's 89. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, that's a struggle, yeah. But yeah.
It was around the time when he changed everybody's lives. Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah.
You know.
Listen, my wife's favorite band in the world is Bon Jovi, and she still talks about how he's the best ever, and now I'll show her pictures of Bon Jovi today.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, you're talking about this lesbian grandmother, John Bon Jovi? She'll be like, how dare you? He's a beautiful man.
Yeah. Well, so, but the funny thing is we couldn't talk about Bon Jovi, but we would actually, in the house where we would all hang out and stuff like that in the mornings and the evenings, we would listen to James Taylor. We'd listen to the
Call
Beatles,
music, yeah.
You know, stuff like that. But yet the Beatles, I mean, you know, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, I mean, come on, we all know what that's about.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band, the whole album,
yeah.
You know, they're on, you know, stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but they're telling us what we, you know, we can't listen to, you know, and back then, I mean, I was listening to, like, Taylor Dane and, you know, Madonna and stuff like that, you know? Like, I wasn't introduced into music, really, until I got out of that school.
Right.
You know, but...
You're like, what were all the things I'm not allowed to listen to? Because that's what I'm going to get into.
Yeah, well, the first album I ever had was The Day I Was Leaving. Because, you know, there's certain bands and certain songs that you always remember, like, the moment you've heard it for the first time. And Led Zeppelin's 4 was given to me by Sam Snead, right? Now, his grandfather was a slamming Sam Snead, right?
Yeah.
He gave me that tape, right? Back in, we graduated in December of 91. He gave me that tape, and I told my dad to put it in and play it before we got off the campus, kind of as an FU, you know, to the school, you know, for not letting us do it. And that was the first time that I ever heard that album. You know, and it changed my life.
One of the best albums of all time.
Oh, yeah. And it changed my life, you know. And then I get back, and here I am, you know, I'm you know, just, you know, collecting all of this, you know, rock music and, you know, like from, you know, from back in the 70s and stuff like that. And then I think the first album I got after that school, because, like I said, I was there for 2.5 years. You know, now I love Cat Stevens, and I love James Taylor and all those guys because of the school. But the first album I got when I came back was Red Hot Chili Peppers. You know, the Blood Sugar Sex Magic.
Blood Sugar Sex Magic, yeah.
Yeah.
Great,
you know,
album,
because,
too.
Yeah. And that was my first one, you know, and I listened to that my whole rest of my sophomore year.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's funny. But yeah, it was a messed up school because you would go Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, you would have rap sessions and you would go into a room. Probably if you knock out all the walls in here, you know, and out there, and you make it in one room, and you have a circle with about 12 chairs, 10 to 12 chairs in it. And I could have, you know, I could request you in the rap, you know, I could request Sarah in the rap, you know, and you know, because I have beef with you guys because you said something mean to me one day or whatever, you know, and you said Tupac's name, and you can't say his name, you know, so I'm going to go get you in trouble. And we would sit in this circle, and they'd be like, all right, who's going to start? And then you would get somebody would get up, like your friend next to you, get up and walk across from you, and you're like, oh, crap, am I going to get yelled at?
Yeah.
And then he would start yelling at me about something that I did, you know.
And so this is just to basically force accountability
following
the rules of the...
Of the school,
yeah,
forcing accountability, and you know, when you have something on your chest, don't hold it, you know, let it go,
sure.
Let it go as soon as you know you're able to, you know, You know, obviously don't do it right there in the house or, yeah. you know, at the wood corral or wherever because, you know, but yeah, so we would have to do that. And then they were doing, the counselors would be like, you know, so like, let's say I was getting yelled at, which I actually did because I started working out at that time, you know, and I got into shape. And one of my friends who was overweight was jealous that I was in shape and he started to yell at me, you know, for being in shape and because I'm flexing and stuff like that at the pond and stuff like that and whatever. And so then the counselors would be like, okay, so why, you know, tell me why, you know, and they would find out the need behind the need of why does this trigger you? Right. You know, why is Jason working out triggering you? And then you come to find out that it's because, you know, growing up my whole life, my parents used to call me fat, you know, or whatever, or my dad passed away when he was in his 40s or 50s from being overweight. Now I'm following in his footsteps and I'm making me insecure. And, right. you know, and then they would start crying and screaming, you know, because then they're screaming about their dad. You know, they're like, yeah, that's right. Let it out, you know.
Right.
And here I am. I'm sitting here because my dad was traveling.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm hearing kids talking about, you know, having like a drug addiction, you know, up to, you know, rape and molestation, you know, to heavy drug use and stuff like that, and snot's coming out of their nose and they're yelling and you know having, you know, like their moment, and they would have them, you know, hit pillows and
right
and stuff like that, and I'm like, oh my
you're like
God.
My dad's just busy.
Yeah, my dad's yeah. Exactly. You know, exactly. So, yeah.
I almost murdered someone on drugs. My dad had to work, so
yeah.
I'm here. All right. Well, we're gonna stop for a second.
Okay.
We'll bring Sarah in, and okay. then she's gonna ask some follow up questions, and you know, delve a little deeper into some things
okay.
that she noticed. So, we'll be right back. Thanks, man.
Say hi.
All right, guys, we are back. Sarah's here. We're about ready to have some Georgia country style hoedown, I think. I'm not 100% on what exactly is going to happen. There's going to be some moonshining, I'm guessing.
We already celebrated the Braves winning
okay,
together,
yeah.
which is like the
That's
most.
Right.
But we were in Iraq at the same time, so I wanted to talk to you about that.
Awesome.
Did you know that I was there
no,
performing in 2005?
No.
Yeah, so that's when I was there right after Saddam was captured.
Okay, yeah.
So that it was like, and we went to Biop.
Did you perform yeah. for Saddam?
I did, yeah. He was my biggest, no.
Right before they yeah. pulled the floor out. And
he told me where all the WMDs were.
Yeah, I knew it.
It was really great. I still hold that secret today.
Mission accomplished.
Where his last stand-up was.
yeah. yeah. yes. So he was alive when I was there, but he okay. had just been captured.
Yeah.
They found him in the hole.
Yeah, they found him in a hole. Yeah. With American money. So anyway, I guess... you said you were at Baghdad International Airport,
mm-hmm.
which they call Biop, and you were in the Army at that point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So what is your favorite MRE to eat?
Oh, my Lord.
Do you know
favorite...
what an MRE is?
No,
it's
no
a
idea.
Meal ready to eat. So it's,
oh, okay.
it's like... It's,
this is like
it's,
astronaut food?
It does not expire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't expire.
Got it.
It's food that
that's,
does not expire.
That's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, just frightening, actually.
Yeah.
So what? Yeah, what are the options? First of all,
oh my God,
what's the worst one?
The worst. Well, they had one called the. I think it was.
I'm picturing like petrified Salisbury steak.
That's everything's petrified.
Yeah,
but I don't remember if it was four or five, but it was called the Five Fingers of Death.
Mm.
And
yum.
That's not what it was called.
Yeah, the hot dogs.
Oh,
little hot dogs! They had the little.
Oh, I didn't eat any of those.
Yeah, and you opened it up, and it was like, you know, when you open up a Vienna sausage can, it has that gelatin in it.
Yeah.
It was like that.
Ooh.
But yeah, it was gross.
Nothing but the best for our soldiers.
No. But chicken tetrazzini was my favorite.
Okay,
chicken tetrazzini. And what was funny was before I went on recruiting duty, you know, the MREs were pretty much okay, and then. I went on recruiting duty, And then, you know, like I said, then I transferred over to the Army. And then they had a whole new MREs. And they had, I can't remember exactly the MRE food that they had. A lot of the same stuff, but you would have milkshakes.
Mm-hmm.
They had milkshakes in them. And the first time I ever saw that, I was like, oh, my God. You know, and I told all my guys, I was like, if you don't like the milkshakes, you know, give them to me, give them to me, give them to me.
Yeah.
And the kids, you know, they're already tired of it by that time. So they'd throw me their milkshakes, and I'd be sitting there just pounding their milkshakes. And the next thing I know, I'm running to the Port-a-John, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, too many of those isn't good. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, I'd
there
say
might have been some chemicals in them.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd say chicken tetrazzini was
chicken tetrazzini. Yeah. Okay. And then when you were in the Army, so you were doing a different duty, so when you saw people driving tanks, were you like, they're doing it wrong?
No. When I saw them driving the tanks, I was like, man, that's supposed to be me.
You know? That's what I thought I was going
to
be doing.
Yeah, I was like, that's supposed to be me. I'm supposed to be in the tank. But
so when you joined the Marines, that was like the mid-90s?
Yeah, 95.
So there were no major combats going on at that point.
No, 95, nothing happened. And then 98, I want to say 98 was Kosovo.
Kosovo, yeah, I was about to say.
And we were all on standby, actually, with that. And we had a flight actually heading halfway there. And then they were, you know, like Saddam wouldn't let, you know, people in, you know, the UN in. So then he finally said, okay, you guys can come in after after he moved stuff around. He said, okay, you guys can come in. And then our flights would turn back around and, you know, and then we would be finally out of, you know, holding. But everywhere we went, we had to, you know, call them and let them know, hey, we're going to Walmart. Like in 29 Palms, you know, it takes, you know, 45 mm-hmm. minutes to get to, you know, the Walmart or the Kmart over there. And so we'd have to, you know, we didn't have cell phones then either. So we'd have to call on the house phone and then go over there and then go to the pay phone, call the pay phone, call the duty mm-hmm. and let them know. And then when we get back home, we'd call back on the house phone. So we had Kosovo then. And then,
I don't think that there was anything.
Was really
then it just became, because Desert Storm was
way before.
Yeah. So it was like not too. I was going to ask you about ISIS. You know, just keep it light.
Yeah.
What do you think about those guys?
I think bad dudes, huh?
Yeah,
they got a temper.
Yeah.
They got a temper on them.
That's they're just organized.
Thinking. Yeah.
Because they have Facebook. But, Yeah, I guess like when I was there, it took us forever to get there because we had got stuck in a sandstorm on a multinational forces camp out near the ziggurat, which was like, I can't remember where. And we went to Camp Freedom Rest, which was like the vacation camp that a lot of the soldiers and Marines would go to. Yeah. It was like, it had a pool. So like,
pretty
when
sweet.
You got 3 days off, instead of going anywhere else, you could just go to this like kind of like luxury camp and
was
unwind.
Was that in Iraq or in Kuwait?
That was in Iraq.
Okay.
Yeah. We started in Kuwait and drove in.
How did you like Kuwait?
Oh, Kuwait was fine.
What time of the year did you go?
Oh, we were there in August.
Kuwait.
Yeah.
Warm.
Kuwait is worse than Iraq when it comes to the weather.
Really?
Yeah, because Iraq is further up north,
mm-hmm.
and Kuwait, we would go down there. Now, we had a full battle rattle on. We're out there going to the rifle range and stuff like that. We're losing 10 pounds just
water weight,
standing
yeah.
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hated it. And so when my first two deployments was, like I said, in Iraq, and then my third one was in Afghanistan, and I was telling myself, I was like, man, I don't want to go. I just don't want to go back. You know, I don't want to go to Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to go. Not because, you know, I'm going to go fight and could die. And I don't want to go to Kuwait.
Yeah.
You know, and then I found out we go to Kazakhstan, which was way better.
Yeah.
You know, much colder, you know, but way better than Kuwait. And it actually made that whole deployment so much better.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Yeah. Because I went to Afghanistan in 2011 and we flew into Kyrgyzstan, which is just part of the other stand. So it's next to Kazakhstan.
Okay, so I've never even heard of that stand.
And Pakistan, yeah. They don't like us there.
Is that right?
Not in Kyrgyzstan, and everything's
negotiated.
They were selling, our podcast, they hate it there.
That's some bullshit.
They were selling, when you go to the farmer's market or like a taco place and they have like the watermelon agua frescas in those giant drums?
Sure.
So they had horse milk in those with a ladle, and they were like selling it on the side of the street. It was fascinating.
Honestly, it's been a while since I had a good ladle of horse milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I respect other cultures, but your ladle of horse milk is too far.
They would make us food all the time in Iraq, and, you know, they'd come over. And, you know, the non-combatants are really friendly.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So we'd go over there, and we'd walk in there, and they'd have this whole spread out on the table. And we'd go over there, and we'd have our little plastic fork, and we're trying to pick the meat off, you know, the lamb and stuff like that. And they're like, no. And they'd reach in there, and they would just rip it out with their hands, and they would grab the rice and just throw it on your plate. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to be eating this. So I would go take it back to my lieutenant and to my other guys. I'd be like, here you guys go. I already ate when I was in there.
Enjoy
and they're
some.
Like, okay, so they're, you know, my lieutenant's eating. I remember telling him, I was like, yeah, I said, to be honest with you, the reason why, and I told him why. He was pissed off.
Yeah, of course.
He's like, they hand shredded this?
Yeah.
Like, that's a delicacy.
Yeah, because when you see how they go to the bathroom, too, you know, and all that stuff. They don't have toilet paper. Yeah, they don't have toilet paper.
That's why you only shake their left hand. Or they don't shake hands. You don't shake hands.
I don't remember how
it
is.
Yeah, they wipe with the right, I think.
Amen.
And you don't show, you don't, when you tell them stop, you don't do it like that. You do it like that.
You say stop.
Or whatever it is in Arabic.
But why is that?
It's just part of their thing.
Oh, okay.
You don't show them the heels of your feet.
Right. And that's part of the throwing
insult.
The shoe.
Yeah.
When they threw that shoe at George Bush.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, this is a very big insult in their culture. I'm like, what culture doesn't find it insulting to throw shoes at you?
Yeah.
This is their thing. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's everyone's thing.
Do you have a fondest memory of your time in Iraq?
Oof.
Besides leaving, or like a funniest moment, or like something that. Worst memory. I mean, I don't want to hear
the worst memory was when I got blown up.
Yeah. Did you get to see any comedy? Did any comedians ever?
Yeah,
come
Dane
through?
Cook showed up.
Unbelievable. Cook showed up. So that was the worst part.
That guy was funny. He
was really big at the time.
Yeah, he.
That's like MySpace.
He saw a soldier that got his eye, and he just, you know, went to town on her, and we were just laughing. But that was when he was doing the thing about sitting up on top of his refrigerator and, like, you know, perched over.
Yeah.
And he just used that. But yeah, we saw. I just saw Dane Cook that one time, and I know Toby Keith had been there quite a bit of times. Some WWE, you know, wrestlers had been there a couple times and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was always outside the wire for the most part of it.
I'm always hearing stories from people who are like, when I was in Iraq, it was the Dane Cook show. That's so bizarre that Dane was doing something so decent. Listen, I don't want to talk shit about
Dane Cook.
And
now he's gone.
Yeah.
Now he's just like.
He's gone full Carrot Top. Like, if you see a picture of him, you're like, whoa, what's going on with this
guy? You thought your friend at school was mad that you worked out.
Yeah.
Wow, really?
There just seems to be a lot of, like, Botox or something going on.
I was
going to
say, full Carrot Top is.
Yeah, I mean.
It's not even funny. It's
scary. Face is weird. It's very uncomfortable.
It's very Pennywise.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
What about the boys' school? Is there a memory from that where you're like, this was like, did you end up having a good time there?
Oh, I had a great time there.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I had a great time there. A lot of my friends had a great time there. You have a lot of people that didn't and are kind of scarred from it. You know?
Do you think it helped you like emotionally deal with like things in the military as
well?
Oh,
it helped me 100%.
Okay, good.
With really having a thick skin, taking criticism.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, obviously being in the military just thicken that skin.
Sure.
Steel
skin.
Yeah, my kids got the same sense of humor, and we're just saying some raunchy stuff. I'm like, you're my son. I shouldn't be saying
that. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, you get in that military mode, you know, mindset. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, the school, you know, pretty much taught me how to take criticism.
Good.
You know, like, you know, I'm a very happy person, you know, and very easy to get along with. I look the opposite. Like, I look kind of intimidating from what people have told me. And then when I was on recruiting duty, my recruiters were like, Sergeant Wright, you need to smile because you don't look very approachable when you're not smiling.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, okay. You know?
But, it's almost scarier smiling.
Yeah. But, yeah. But it's taught me a lot. It's built a lot of my character. Taught me not to take things seriously. I mean, especially, you know, growing up in the South, you know, I mean, I've dealt with racism, you know, but not as much as you would think you know, growing up in the 70s and early 80s in Georgia.
Right.
But, I mean, it was there, and I dealt with it, and, you know, I look at it as, you know what, that's you, that's your character, that's your ignorance,
yeah.
And it's not going to affect me in any way. Like, I know who I am.
Right.
You know, and I, you know, so.
Good. So, yeah. Like, are you out of the military now?
I'm 100%.
You retired?
Yeah, I'm 100% retired, 100% disabled, so.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that 100% disability can kind of fool you because it's an accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't look like I'm disabled. You know, I didn't come, you know, wheeling in here or anything like
right.
that. But, you know, it's just, you know, 20 years of military service, you know, when you look at a 30-year-old veteran, he's actually, like, 50-something,
yeah.
You know, so a 40-something-year-old veteran is, you know, is like feeling like he's in his 60s and 70s,
right?
You know, so all of my disabilities add up, you know, from literally my knees to my neck,
mm-hmm.
you know, or to my head, if you want to include the TBI and the PTSD and stuff like that. So,
right,
but
it doesn't. I don't let it run me, you know. I don't let it, you know, take over me. I keep myself busy, you know, and.
Raising a family
yeah.
and stuff, so it sounds
yeah.
like you still got your hands full. With,
yeah, raising my family and you know, finally just, you know, really living my life, you know, for the first, you know, my first time, you know, because obviously up until the age of 20, you know, you're living your parents.
Yep.
And then
yeah.
from 20 to 40, I was living the military, you know, so now from 40, you know, 40 on, you know, I'm living my life.
Right.
I'm going to let Rick take over because yep. I have to run upstairs.
She's got to perform.
I'll see
we'll
you
go
after.
Up and see her in a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Is there anything you want to promote? Social media? Do you have, you know, anything out there? Or you just want to
no.
be on a podcast? No, you're
no,
good?
No, I'll promote my sister.
All right.
Because she'll kill me if I don't.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I'll promote her on Instagram. I know she's big on her Instagram.
Okay.
So it's... It's just, I guess, at Meredith Kirk, M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H-K-I-R-K.
Okay.
You know, she's a golfer, so she gives tips and advice and all that stuff on golfing.
She has a podcast as well.
Yeah, she does a podcast and she has YouTube videos and stuff like that. But I don't really know the depth of that. But you can get all that information on her Instagram.
Okay.
And of course, if you want to follow my dull life, you know, I'm on there too. I think it's Jason Wright.
Yeah.
Or Jason at Jason Wright 74 or at J Dubs 1812. It's
one, there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
so,
it's
yeah.
a lot of them. But if you yeah if you can find me. Okay, yeah.
At Wright 74.
At Wright 74.
Nice.
WRIGHT 74 if you want to follow me.
Okay. So. We appreciate you being on, man. Very interesting stories. I feel like we could go on for hours if
yeah.
we had the time, but I appreciate you telling us some of that stuff. And,
yeah, if we had the time in the AC.
yeah, that's the... listen, it's always summer in the Comedy Store
yeah.
basement. A
yeah.
lot of people don't realize
that's
that.
That's awesome.
We try and keep it like Kuwait down here yeah. for the memories.
Yeah, you're bringing them back.
We have a live show, live version of Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers, December 8th. You want to come out, be interviewed, you have a chance to do that there. If you have a friend who you think is interesting or stupid and you want them to be interviewed, that's a great opportunity to tell your friend, hey, let's go see this comedy show. And then you just really emphasize what an idiot they are, and we will do everything we can to try and exploit that for our benefit. So come on out. Tickets will be available pretty soon, and that'll be fun. So we appreciate you guys listening. Thank you for being on, Jason. It's an absolute pleasure, man.
Thank you for having
and
me.
And my grandfather would be very excited that I spoke to a real man for the first time. So thanks for being here,
and
good luck to you and your family.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for listening, guys.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM IngramPod on Twitter. That's IngraHam Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.